Technology of Leadership.
Welcome to the Technology of Leadership Motivating Achievement audio series. I'm Dan Collette, a partner at Spencer Schenck Capers and your host for this series. This program is intended to be a complement to the leadership workshop you recently attended. For others, this may be your first introduction to the basic concepts of the Motivating Achievement philosophy. While valuable as an introduction, this supporting product is not meant to replace the need for in-depth instruction at a company workshop. So let's get started. We live in a world of accelerating change. Competition is fierce and good management is essential. For a business to thrive today, corporate leaders and managers must not only have a vision, but they must make their vision a reality. And to do that, a leader needs to maximize his or her best asset, people. At Spencer Schenck Capers & Associates, we coach and develop leaders how to improve the critical people issues that can make or break a company. Our premise is simple. Without question, the key to meeting today's challenges has to do with creating an environment that produces a high-performing workforce. A workforce that wants to achieve extraordinary results. Some individuals seem to be born as leaders. They don't just motivate or provide direction or even challenge their people with attainable goals. They do all these things and they do it repeatedly. They create the conditions that produce great results. So what really is a great leader? A great leader stimulates employees to push themselves and accept personal responsibility to meet or exceed tough performance targets. A great leader creates an organization where people do things above and beyond the call of duty, where people are committed to delivering extraordinary results. The Leadership Process Motivating Achievement Workshop, or LPMA, introduces you to the research behind what motivates leaders and their employees so effectively. This quantitative research has been proven through decades of real-life performance in the workplace. Through those research concepts presented at the seminar and reinforced here, you are first able to assess yourself, second, the people you work with, and third, the situations you face as a corporate leader. You should consider this audio series a guide, a coaching tool. Remember that the only people who don't have coaches are amateurs who are not trying to get better. Think about that for a moment. Professionals in most fields utilize the services of a coach. Even the best athletes, like golf great Tiger Woods, benefit from the knowledge and instruction only a coach can provide. Developing leadership skills is no different. Those who have gained the most from the LPMA workshop are people who have made the material part of their everyday work approach. They have avoided the pitfall of viewing the seminar as merely an event. With use and coaching, they had a significantly higher retention rate and found the concepts more valuable in their professional lives. To get the maximum results from this audio series, we suggest that you listen to one section at a time. Internalize the concepts, even commit portions to memory. Listen to the section a second time. The more familiar you become with the material, the more you will integrate it into your personal leadership style and ultimately, the more effective you will be. If you've attended the LPMA workshop, review your notes, your notebook, and the colored motive cards as you listen. Your learning will be greatly enhanced. If you're working with Spencer Schenck Capers as an ongoing client, you may be asked to review specific sections as a result of that relationship. Before we begin, some background about our foundational research would be helpful. Our material is based on 40 years of groundbreaking work by Dr. David McClellan of Harvard University, as well as other colleagues. As the dean of the School of Social Psychology, Dr. McClellan explored the underlying themes of behavior in the workplace. His research is referenced in literally every major work on motivation. His body of work has provided insight into the differences in people's behavior and the driving factors behind them. Feedback from decades of application in the real business world has refined his principles to where they are today. Business leaders owe him a debt of gratitude for unveiling and illuminating the motivational component behind the science of leadership. This audio series is divided into sections. Each section will review and amplify a key LPMA concept. The partners and trainers at Spencer Shank Capers and Associates will add personal insights and examples as part of each section. In addition, you will hear examples of individual dialogue and thought processes that illustrate important concepts. First, we're going to define motives so that they can be identified and aroused in yourself and then in others. We will address the three specific social motives that have an impact in the workplace. Understanding these motives and recognizing the kinds of behavior they generate will be our first step in reviewing the technology of leadership. Second, we'll look at the thematic apperception test, or TAT, that reveals and measures our motives. The TAT is a key tool in determining our motive profile of the three social motives. Third, we'll examine the motive subcategories, which determine the strength of the motive and the thought processes that we have naturally that drive our behavior. Fourth, we will review specific leadership behaviors strongly influenced by our motives that affect job performance and discuss why different work situations demand different leadership styles. Fifth, we'll direct our attention to the organizational climate, which occurs as a consequence of leadership styles. Research has repeatedly identified climate of an organization as central to long-term productivity. Sixth, goal setting will be discussed as we break the goal setting process into its component parts and emphasize how they arouse a person's motives towards a goal and optimize the likelihood of success. Seventh, we'll look at job fit and examine the reasons why different people are better suited for different jobs and how motives play a major part in matching the person to the right position. And lastly, we'll conclude with a review of the core principles of our technology of leadership. You can find all the sections named and numbered on your CD insert card. You may now continue on to section 2 or the section of your choice.
Technology of Leadership. Section 2, Motives.
What is it that produces our behavior? Theorists agree that all behavior is caused, stimulated, or as we would say, motivated by something. We drink water because we're thirsty. We spend time with friends because we enjoy their company. We decide to take a job because we want a new challenge or greater prestige. This behavior is driven by what we know as a motive. When we talk about motives, we're not talking about the answer to who done it. For our purposes, when we discuss motives, we're talking about our repetitive underlying thought processes. These thoughts, which we are usually not even aware of, are the why behind the way we act. They drive our behavior. Some people think a lot about their need to accomplish things of importance. They often would rather do it alone, if alone helps them meet their goals.
You know, I have an idea for a new software system that should streamline keeping track of our inventory.
Some people think about ways to seek and nurture social relationships.
We really need to form a softball team this summer. The company's never done that before, and, you know, getting together would be great.
Others think a lot on how they have impact on the greater good, be it a company or society.
I would really like it if our company would start a charitable foundation to help inner-city youth.
These thought processes or repetitive images in our minds are a powerful tool. They become our internal engine for accomplishment. To use a golf analogy, a golfer who hits 1,000 shots won't be as good as the one who hits 1,000,000 shots. The same holds true with mental imaging. If you think about something a lot, you prepare to do it. Mental practice creates better performance. To understand why a person acts a certain way, we need to discover their underlying concerns. We need to know these concerns because it naturally follows that these repetitive patterns of thinking lead to a person's behavior. Research can assist us in understanding these unconscious thoughts and how they direct people to behave in very different ways. We call this the technology of leadership. So what motivates your employees?
Everyone in this company is interested in only one thing. It's their paycheck.
Money for most people is a scorecard to measure success or failure. For some, it is the end-all and be-all. But while money can be a reinforcer, it is not a driver of behavior. A company's performance can't be predicted solely by looking at the average salary it pays its employees. It's more complicated than that. Things that are intrinsically fulfilling create more job satisfaction than just getting a bigger paycheck. For some, greater satisfaction comes from a job well done, or the friendships at work, or perhaps the opportunity for promotion. And there are jobs some people love so much, they do them for free. Remember, if someone is going to do something for a long time, they should have a stronger reason to do it than just the dollar. Think about the times in your own experience when you were driven to accomplish a goal. You were not driven by external forces, but because of something deep inside. When you acted on that internal need, you felt satisfied, content. Listen.
Okay, what I really want to do is get back into shape and run a marathon.
I think I have it in me someday to write the great American novel.
Today is the day I'm going to shoot under 80 for 18 holes.
Our behaviors have meaning to us. We behave the way we do because it satisfies something basic to us as individuals. And our behavior stems from that internal set of motivators. So what precisely is the definition of a motive? McClellan gives us specific language. A motive is a recurring concern towards a goal state, measured in fantasy, which drives, directs, and selects behavior. It'll be helpful for you to memorize that definition. State it again. A motive is a recurring concern towards a goal state, measured in fantasy, which drives, directs, and selects behavior. With that definition firmly in mind, let's break down the component parts of a motive. Motives are patterns of recurrent concerns. These patterns are reflected in the private dialogues we have when we are daydreaming or when our brain is on autopilot. Have you ever been so engrossed when driving that you can't remember precisely how you got to your destination? These private thoughts are consistent patterns you probably aren't even aware of. You are engrossed naturally in those reoccurring dialogues with yourself. These unconscious thoughts, which are patterned early in childhood, have a consistent theme or themes. Most of us typically have the same concerns over a long period of time. They can come in different settings and situations, but how we think and what we are concerned about remains fairly constant over time. Here's Brad Spencer.
Motives are at the core of our personality and are basic to who we are. Motives don't make us good or bad, nor do they dictate IQ. Motives simply explain the behavioral choices we make, which we find executives and managers want to be able to predict. I'm asked all the time, do motives change? The answer is they certainly can change. On the other hand, for the purposes of management perspectives, one's dominant motives can pretty much be considered fixed.
When we talk about motives, we're not referring to wants or desires or even preferences. We are talking about psychological needs. A physical need, food or oxygen, is obvious. Psychological needs are less obvious, but they too exert a powerful influence. And like physical needs, we spend a great deal of time and energy trying to satisfy them, either positively or negatively. Think for a moment how a drowning person might feel. The only thing they can think about is air, and they struggle to get it. Struggling to get psychological needs met creates the same dynamic. If we can't get these needs met immediately, we start to compensate. How productive can you be at the office if you don't have air? It may sound like a silly question, but that's what people truly experience. It's one reason for lack of productivity. If the environment consistently denies our needs, our self-esteem pays a price, and we wither. It's only when our psychological needs are met that we can function well. A key, then, for leadership emerges from this fact. People who find a way to get their psychological needs satisfied behave optimally. If their work environment and interactions with management provide them an opportunity to meet their needs, they thrive. To the manager, it looks like they're doing a good job, but to them, it feels satisfying. Motives are directed toward a goal. A motive is a recurring concern with a purpose. We want something to happen as a consequence of our concern. We want that something to create a feeling we like. We might say we want to feel good. We seek those situations that deliver those good feelings. But what makes us feel good may not make the person in the next cubicle feel good. Stated another way, people seek different goals based upon different motives. And the kinds of situations that deliver those good feelings differ between people with different motives. Consider this simple example using three different kinds of food: salad, lobster, and water.
What a good game of tennis! Hey, that last set alone took us an hour. I'm sunburned as well as sore.
Thanks for the lunch invitation, but I had a late breakfast today, and I probably wouldn't eat very much anyway.
Wasn't that terrific news about our new client? We worked hard to land him. I'm up for a celebration dinner.
In which scenario would a glass of water have been the best option? The light salad? The lobster dinner? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Motives and feelings associated with them work in the same way. There are different motives that give us a sense of being satisfied. Research has identified over 20 motives that drive our behavior. Dr. McClellan isolated the three primary motives that are responsible for the vast majority of our social behavior. The three social motives that lead to patterns of behavior at work are the need for achievement, the need for affiliation, the need for power. The need for achievement is characterized by the need to outperform others, or meet or exceed a high internal or external standard of excellence, and a desire to innovate. The need for affiliation is characterized by having a strong desire to establish and maintain close relationships with others, or a concern to avoid disruption of relationships. The need for power is characterized by the desire to have influence over others, or to be seen as having high status. People usually think spontaneously in terms of achievement, affiliation, or power. They think in these ways because the associated behavior leads to outcomes that are emotionally satisfying, but in different ways. And naturally, one motive often exists in some combination with the other two. Brad Spencer amplifies this for us.
This makes the model pretty complex. Each of these motives is present in each of us. They're present in varying degrees. The three motives are different, not better, not worse. Motives are needs, and we must satisfy them. Therefore, they're profound in their ability to shape our behaviors. The three social motives lead us to very different perspectives, very different worldviews, very different strengths, very different behavior patterns. And that's why they're so important for management to understand.
What is so critical to understand about motives is that people communicate their motivations in what they say and do all the time. It's not a secret. A person's everyday language and behavior provide a constant flow of information that can help you determine their motive. Finally, motives drive, direct, and select behavior. Drive means the intensity or the horsepower that gives us the energy to pursue a goal. For example, if one has a high affiliation motive, they are much more inclined to call people just to check in. Direct means the vector or direction to avoid conflict because it disrupts the relationship. Select means choosing behavior given the motive. Someone with a high power motive is more likely to select conflict as an influence method than one with a high affiliation need. Another way to understand motives is to differentiate between a motive and a value. Frequently, motives and values get confused. A value can be defined as anything that is important to you. It is a conscious, deliberate thought process that explicitly defines right or wrong. A value can predict short-term behavior, but it may or may not actually be satisfying. A motive, on the other hand, is satisfying. People take pleasure in doing it. Motives predict long-term behavior. We pursue motives because we intrinsically want to. We pursue values because we believe we should. For example, people may think power is bad, yet still have an intrinsic need to influence others. This obviously leads to internal dynamic tension. The conflict between a value such as, it's not nice to be competitive, and a motive such as, I need to be the best, is well documented. It's called the approach avoidance conflict. This conflict can lead a person to become immobilized.
If I'm a nice person and let others win, I may be doing the right thing, but I hate coming in second, so I won't even try.
This is the kind of resolution that is not at all uncommon to the tension between values and motives. But motives and values are not always necessarily at odds. When they are aligned, they can work powerfully together. One final point about motives and what motivation means. We don't really motivate other people. Motivation isn't the same thing as revving someone up. Motivation is the skill of inviting others to recognize the benefits of meeting their needs and the art of blending your organization's needs to those of your employees. In summary, motives tell us what we enjoy, what we're thinking about, and what we're trying to get satisfied. They are the inner patterns of thought that give us our innate strengths. Our thoughts precede behavior, and our behavior drives results.
Technology of Leadership. Section 3, The Social Motives.
Motives determine much more than our feelings. They determine our passions, and those passions make us behave differently. Passionate thoughts and feelings fire the brain and drive us, moment by moment. McClellan referred to motives as the feeling side of commitment. Everyone has these three motives, the need for achievement, the need for affiliation, and the need for power, present in their personality. But most of us have one motive that exerts a stronger influence on our thoughts and subsequently our behavior. We refer to the strongest motive as the dominant motive. To better understand the dominant motive, let's look at three different people who work in the same company and are involved in the same project. The project, however, is in trouble. It's over budget, behind schedule, and in general disarray. Later, they will meet with their boss. These examples are caricatures and are exaggerated to make a point. Listen to the thought process each goes through as they drive into work. Mr. Need for Achievement is driving in traffic that's a nightmare. The radio says there's an accident ahead. Within minutes of being stuck, he has identified two alternate routes to work, and he's off the roadway in a flash. He can't figure out why all these other people would sit in traffic when there's obviously a better way. Now he's way ahead of the game, feeling better for his efforts. Listen to his achievement thought process.
It's no good that we take forever to decide everything. Meetings about meetings. If I had the job, I'd get it done in no time. I already have the fastest turnaround of any of the managers. I don't know what the others do with their time.
Meanwhile, on another road, Mr. Need for Affiliation has stopped at a bakery. He's concerned that his group might be demoralized by the project's poor performance. As he looks through the bakery case, he remembers everyone's preferences and buys donuts for his coworkers. Listen to the affiliation thought process.
One of the manager's wives just had a baby, and the boss didn't even take a moment to congratulate him. He really doesn't seem to care about people. A dozen donuts should let them know that someone cares about them.
On a different road, Miss Need for Power is seething. She believes that the team is trying to sabotage her. As she drives, she has mentally outlined precisely what she would do to make the team members get in line, including specific things she would say to each one. Catch the power thinking in this next example.
Oh, they can't make me the scapegoat. I didn't work this hard for all these years to go down in flames. The first thing I'm going to do is tell the boss exactly what he needs to do. I know others will support me. The guy is lost trying to get into all the details. That's what he's got people for.
This little vignette shows how a person's thoughts, not the specifics, but the themes of their thoughts, play themselves out in all kinds of situations. Mr. Need for Achievement constantly thought about how to do things better. Mr. Need for Affiliation's first concern was typically how things were going between people. And Ms. Need for Power was trying to influence and have impact on others. So what does this information about social motives have to do with leadership? Why should you bother to identify a person's dominant motive profile? It's not to diagnose psychological conditions. It's to help you lead and manage your people so they find intrinsic satisfaction from doing their jobs. In simple terms, this means you are meeting the needs of their motives. If you can understand and engage in activities that satisfy your own motives, you'll be better able to recognize motives in others and allow them to satisfy what drives them. When we recognize and address the motives in others, they're motivated. Brad Spencer shares how we can do that.
Essentially, the way to understand someone's dominant motive is to understand the why behind their behavior. People are telling this all the time. They're well advertised, but we've been socialized out of picking up these sometimes subtle, sometimes very, very strong clues. You're far better at reading people's motives than you probably recognize. Someone who's avoiding conflict is probably telling you about affiliation motivation. Someone who's constantly in competition, trying to meet a standard, is probably telling you in many ways about achievement. Someone's looking to influence you, or someone's concerned about status, is telling you about power motivation, and it comes out in their language, comes out in what they're interested in, and what they're trying to accomplish.
During the workshop, you receive 3 colored cards to help you learn how to measure each of the social motives. The cards outline the images that need to be present to score for a motive. We emphasize that this is important but detailed information. It might be a good idea to refer back to the cards as you listen. Need for achievement images include outperforming someone else, meeting or surpassing an internal standard of excellence, being involved in a unique, innovative accomplishment, advancing a career or long-term goal. To repeat, achievement imagery means the achievement motive is present. If one of these 4 processes is not present, no matter how much you would like to make it so, the achievement motive is not there. A sample of achievement behaviors includes when people get energy from working toward goals, set challenging goals, optimize in all areas of life, take personal responsibility, want frequent and specific feedback, alter behavior on the basis of feedback, are frustrated when unable to get data on results, choose experts over friends to work with. Listen to the following thought process for evidence of achievement motivation.
I know we're only part of the team, but I feel terrific about how far we've come on this. It's been challenging, but if we can accomplish this, we can set a new standard for blood test procedures that will save a lot of lives. Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Let's turn now to need for affiliation images and concerns. Establishing, restoring, or maintaining a close, friendly relationship. Showing concern about the disruption of a positive relationship. Perceiving a setting as a social situation conducive to friendship. Here's a sample of affiliation behaviors. They get energy from associating with people. They will look to make friends at work. They think about keeping in touch. They write more letters and emails, make more personal phone calls. They put people before tasks. They take negative task feedback personally. They empathize or console others when needed or appropriate. They choose friends over experts to work with. The next example illustrates affiliation motive in a person's thought. Let's listen.
Here I am, stuck at my desk trying to finish this report. Now, I know it's got to get done. My supervisor wants it on his desk by 8 a.m., but everybody else, well, they left early. And they're probably down having drinks without me. Well, I'd rather be shooting the breeze with my friends than here in the office.
Now for need for power. These images include showing concern by taking strong, forceful actions that affect others, giving unsolicited aid or advice, thinking about regulating or controlling others' lives, thinking about influencing, persuading, or making a point when the concern is not to reach agreement, thinking about impressing other people or the world at large, thinking about generating strong positive or negative emotions in others, thinking about reputation or position. A sample of power behaviors are seen when people get energy from influencing other people and outcomes. They look for opportunities to have influence and impact. They may prefer to give performance feedback rather than receive it. They use information to control or influence others, even to withholding information. They prefer attention in public and do things for status. They elevate risk in terms of impact on reputation. They seek out persons of high regard with whom to work. The following thought process illustrates imagery present for the power motive.
This report isn't at all what I wanted. My doctorate in the field actually qualifies me much better to finish this up the right way.
Motives by themselves are not good or bad. Working from a power motive doesn't necessarily make one a dictator. Similarly, working from an affiliation motive doesn't make one lazy or oblivious to achieving goals. What is obvious is that the specific tasks are carried out with greater expertise and ease from each of the motives. Being a CEO is easier from the power motive. A preschool professional works best from affiliation motive. As you recall, if you've practiced in your mind's eye 1,000 times, you'll be better at it. This is the edge motives give, as Brad Spencer explains.
An aroused motive is like an itch that needs to be scratched. Now, if you arouse the achievement motive, people are more innovative, more goal-directed. They use feedback more effectively. They become feedback freaks. When affiliation's aroused, people want to be with others. They want to be liked. They're better at that. If power's aroused, people want to influence people more. They make significant differences in how others behave. One is not good or bad. There's a situational place. Each one's appropriate. Research is clear, however. If you're managing individual contributors, engineers, accountants, salespeople, etc., you will have higher performance when you understand and then do the right things to cause achievement motivation to be aroused.
In summary, knowing your own dominant motive and identifying the motives of your employees will help you create the environment and set the tasks that address their motives. And when that happens, they experience increased energy, enthusiasm, and creativity for the job. When you align an individual's needs with the accomplishment of your organization's goals, you are applying the technology of leadership.
Technology of Leadership. Section 4, the Thematic Apperception Test.
Are you driven by achievement, affiliation, or power, or a combination of the three? As motives are a key to understanding behavior, it's important for us to recognize our own motive profile. But how do we know what it is? Motives are developed in early childhood, and many of us have a fairly clear picture of what drives us. But sometimes our perceptions differ from reality. Spencer Shank Capers uses the Thematic Apperception Test, or TAT, developed originally by Dr. Henry Murray and adapted by McClellan to reveal and measure our motives. Before you attended the LPMA workshop, you took the TAT by looking at 6 different photographs. No information was provided about the pictures. You were asked to quickly create a fantasy story of approximately 100 words for each photograph.
Some of the pictures were easier than others, but for me, I thought coming up with stories in that short a time was hard. I probably could have done better with more time.
Those stories were then scored for the imagery present. Imagery is also the term for stating the presence of each of the 3 social motives in a story: achievement, affiliation, and power. The picture becomes a stimulus of our conscious and unconscious concerns. It's difficult for someone to manipulate the stories or put motives in that aren't in their subconscious. Susan Pierce gives us a key to the TAT.
The key is in the fantasy. Although some people have difficulty understanding why fantasy or imagination matters, especially in business, it's directly tied to the unconscious thought processes we all have. Fantasy responses can reveal motives. Remember, those patterns of thinking drive and select our behavior whether we own them or not. Or stated another way, if it's in your head, it will come out.
The objective scoring of your fantasy fictional stories results in your motive profile that reflects the strength of your 3 social motives. To get your score, your data is compared against a narrow population sample of similar executives on a percentile basis. The people who score the TAT tests for us have over 100 hours of training, and the reliability of the score is based on specifically developed laws of interpretation. This profile signature is what, in part, makes us each unique in terms of our personality. Your motive profile becomes a key component of the LPMA workshop and is discussed at length. Most participants find the test fascinating and are anxious to know what the tests will reveal.
Oh, it will definitely be interesting to find out what all those made-up stories show. I've never taken a test like that.
Once people get their motive profile, it's not unusual for participants to have two reactions to the test results. One is surprise.
I can't believe that I didn't score higher for achievement. That's actually what motivates me. Even during school, I was the perfectionist. I couldn't stand not to do my best.
The other typical response people have is confirmation of what they anticipated.
I wasn't surprised at all that my score showed a high mark for power. I thought I'd get a high score.
Some may feel their profile differs from their values. When this occurs, they feel confused or upset. Some can become dismayed when they get feedback on their TAT to find their values are not reflected by their motives, as if some motives are better than others.
These scores say I'm stronger in power than in achievement? This can't be right.
Now, I had a high score for affiliation. That surprised me. Does that mean I don't want to achieve?
It may take time to absorb the information contained in your personal motive profile. This is to be expected. This is especially true for those who scored high in the power motive. The reason here is obvious. Power is often interpreted as a negative. Zero-sum games, when one wins at another's expense, are how most people think of power. Say power, and several other phrases come instantly to mind. For example, power corrupts. McClellan once said he wished he'd named the power motive the need for influence, because people attribute so much negativity to the concept of power. It's important to recognize there are two categories of power. One is personalized power, which is used for self-promotion. If a person's need for power is perceived as personalized power, it is generally resisted. People who are high in personalized power tend to see the world as a win-lose game. Survival of the fittest is their credo, and they will do whatever it takes to get ahead. The following thought process reflects personalized power.
I've spent so much time getting my sales team to meet this quarter's projections, I've talked myself hoarse in meetings. I've had to get on a lot of backs, but with 2 weeks to go, I think we may meet our goals, which means I finally get that raise I deserve. Well, this has been a big job, but I came through in the clutch.
Socialized power, on the other hand, is used for the good of a group and can galvanize commitment and dedication. People who are high in their socialized power needs often exercise power for the benefit of others. They seek win-win solutions and tend to effectively suppress their inner need for domination. Listen to this example of socialized power.
I think if we can pull together this next quarter, we can meet and exceed our sales projections. This is a great team, and if we keep our energy going, focus, and cut out our distractions over the next 4 weeks, we can earn some high fives from the boss.
The goals of power are what discriminate the value of power, not the fact of power in and of itself. In summary, motives are truly neutral. No one motive profile is superior to another. Each motive has its positives and negatives. Motives and values aren't always at odds. When they are aligned, they can work powerfully together.
Technology of Leadership. Section 5, Motive Subcategories.
Now that we know about motives, it's time to subdivide. Each of the three social motives, the need for achievement, the need for affiliation, and the need for power, has a variety of subcategories or subcats, as we call them. Like motives, the subcats are also thought patterns. They are the kind of thoughts a person with both a high and dominant motive tends to think naturally. Their presence determines the strength of a motive. The more subcats present, the stronger the dominant motive is in a person. Why are subcats important? They are key to an individual's effectiveness in accomplishing a goal. The presence and frequency of subcategories increases the internal mental practice needed to achieve a desired goal. Here's Susan Pierce.
The strength of a motive is measured by the presence or absence of these subcats. If a person has more subcats present in their thoughts, then the stronger that motive is. In leadership, knowing what motive is dominant in your employees and how strong it is provides you with the understanding to harness their best. Using the subcats is a crucial step in the process.
For those of you who have taken the LPMA workshop, the red, yellow, and green cards list each of the motive subcats in detail. We now want to review them briefly. Many of the subcats are similar across the three motives, but are refocused for the specific motive. There are 10 possible subcategories that characterize the strength of the achievement motive. The achievement subcats are 1. Need. When someone in sales tells you in confidence that she wants to be the top salesperson of the year, that all her life she's wanted to be the best at something really challenging, and this is her chance, this scores for need. Number 2, success anticipation, or SA, is evident when someone anticipates a goal attainment. An employee who believes a project shows great promise anticipates success. 3, failure anticipation, or FA. When a salesman says a new sales strategy is doomed, he's anticipating failure, or FA. 4, personal blocks, or BP. When the progress of a goal or activity is prevented by something within the person or within their control, they score for having a personal block, a BP. 5, world block, or BW. When someone believes an event or quality out in the world outside their control, such as weather or traffic accidents, is preventing them from achieving their goals, they are said to have a world block, or BW. 6, help, or H, exists when an individual seeks or receives aid from someone else in an achievement-related activity. 7, activity, or ACT, when someone tells her plans for execution and the steps she's taking to address the situation, she's showing a high level of activity toward the goal. 8, positive feelings, F+. When someone feels good or anticipates good feelings about an accomplishment, they score for positive feelings. These are universally sought feelings for most of us. We want to feel good about things. 9, negative feelings, F-. When someone feels bad about failure to attain an achievement goal, sports managers frequently exhibit F+ and F-. Their language and demeanor show they love to win and they hate to lose. 10. Achievement theme, or TH, exists when it's evident that the individual's major plot, theme, or thought process is concerned only with achievement. If power or affiliation is present, achievement theme doesn't score. The secretary who comes in every day committed to do the job well, is perfectly organized, is someone whose theme is achievement-oriented. Subcats for the affiliation motive resemble the ones described above. There are also 10 subcats that characterize the strength of the power motive. 3 were not present for the other motives. As they weren't mentioned in the workshop, let's look at those. Increased prestige, or PA+, can be seen when the concern is with the increase of prestige or position.
I told my supervisor that the only office I would accept is the one next to the vice president's.
Lowered prestige, or PA-, is present when the concern is about losing position or prestige.
Really, I could not accept working in an office without a window.
Affect, or EFF, is present when an individual responds to another's attempt at power.
I was really intimidated when the supervisor walked in the room.
In summary, the information regarding motives and subcats is considered a cornerstone in the technology of leadership. The goal is to give you the tools to identify the imagery and subcats of others' motives. When you arouse a motive of someone you work with, they become energized to do the job. Their work begins to become a part of who they are.
Technology of Leadership. Section 6, Leadership Behaviors.
What kind of leader would your employees say you are? Are you driven to accomplish tasks and to help others accomplish them? Do you make decisions that promote your own acceptance? Do your decisions build a sense of community, or do you try to maintain control and get compliance? Do you try to create an environment of challenge, high direction, and oversight? Whether you admit it or not, you have a natural leadership style. It's the organizing theme behind all that you do day in and day out. It grows from who you are as a person and from your dominant motive. But you can still have a choice in how you lead. You can follow your innate nature, or you can consciously look at people and situations and choose a style that adds value to their efforts. Tom Coble looks at leadership style from a historic perspective.
Historically, leadership style or behavior has been modeled after the command and control mentality of the military. There's been a significant shift occurring over the past several years, however. The shift varies in its focus based on industry, based on the demographics of the organization, and the characteristics and the personality of each organization. While highly respected individual researchers still disagree as to the best leadership style, it's key to recognize what those options are and to see which one or combinations of styles our own leadership behavior resembles. We have to then ask an additional question. Does this style or combination of styles add value to the people I am leading?
These are the 6 basic styles: soloing, coaching, placating, involving, dominating, and governing. Each can be effective and add to team performance in certain circumstances. The soloing style prefers taking personal responsibility for accomplishing the tasks. Often, it's a style where the leader assumes the role of the doer. It's the style that says, "I have to do it for it to be done right." Listen for soloing in this example.
Jeff, I have a good idea of the results I want to achieve in expanding our marketing efforts. I know you've been working on this, but I decided to talk directly to our agency about our media buy.
The coaching style focuses on the development of others to accomplish the task. It provides ongoing support, patience, encouragement, and direction for long-term development. This style provides a high degree of instruction and learning from both success and failure. This style assumes very little responsibility for doing the work. Listen to this coaching opportunity.
John, I'd like to see how we can increase our manufacturing output 5% this next quarter. Now, I'm going to put you in charge of developing a new incentive program. You have some great expertise in this area. So what I'd like you to do is work up a proposal, and we'll sit down together and we'll review what you've come up with.
The placating style puts relationships first. Goals and standards are second. The placating style seeks harmony and avoids conflict. This style is positive, people-focused, and emphasizes interaction and familiarity. Can you hear the placating style in this dialogue?
Sandy, I really appreciate your hard work, and I know you've been trying to establish new supply contacts, and although you haven't been able to nail anything down yet, I really do appreciate your efforts, so keep working at it.
The involving style creates a positive work environment through teamwork, participation on the team, and integration. Listen to an example of the involving style.
Bill, I'd like to put an in-house team together to do some strategic planning, and I want you to check with each of the other supervisors to find those people you think make the best team.
The dominating style has control or compliance as its focus. It provides close monitoring and high clarity on what needs to be done and how to do it. The dominating leader has difficulty relinquishing decision-making authority. This style does not provide much background on why a task is to be done. Here's a good example.
I'm sending out a memo today to all our departments establishing our corporate goals for the year.
You'll notice each division has a quarterly percentage increase. Now, I want a summary of your plans to meet these goals on my desk by Monday.
The governing style gives clear direction on the task and the reasoning behind it. Decision-making is retained by the leader, who uses input from others to make the decisions. If others have the expertise, he or she coordinates or facilitates. The following example illustrates this style.
I think you should all know that we've been approached by another company to talk about a potential merger. Now, as you know, our goal is to increase market share. So I want each of you to give me your best thinking on the positives and negatives of moving ahead. I think as a team, we're going to make the right decision.
Our leadership behavior emanates from one of our three social motives. The achievement motive results in the soloing or coaching styles. The affiliation motive results in the placating or involving styles.
The power motive results in the dominating and governing styles. Tom Coble expounds. There is no one perfect way to lead all people all the time. Different situations and different people will require different leadership styles. Effective executives use a collection of distinct leadership styles, each in the right measure at just the right time. Such flexibility is tough to put into action, but it can be learned. The payoff is in organizational performance. To do this, a leader must think about what do the people and the situation need from me right now that will add value.
Certainly, you should take advantage of your strengths, but there are other models or alternatives from which to draw. Mature leaders adapt their management style to the situation. Management style also has a forceful and direct impact on other leadership elements, such as goal setting, clarity, listening, feedback, task performance, performance monitoring, controls and regulations, consequences, and conflict. To make your leadership behavior of more value, try these three things. Be conscious, be intentional, and be focused. And before you act, ask yourself these questions. What is my goal, really? How does this serve the self-interest of the follower? What is the climate of this individual or group? What is the competence of the individual to accomplish the task? What is the time frame? What is the consequence to the organization if the task is not completed or done correctly? What is my history with the individual or group? What are the barriers to accomplishment? In summary, good leadership is the art of using the appropriate style given the person and the situation. Take an unbiased look at your own style. What leadership approach best fits your work situation? Can you add a second complementary style that adds value to your leadership skills? Remember, management is getting people to do things right. Leadership is getting people to do the right thing. Leadership is thus the skillful use of influence to bring about the accomplishment of goals.
Technology of Leadership, Section 7, Organizational Climate.
What's it like to work for you or your company? How would you assess your company if the roles are reversed and you sat across the desk from the boss? Would you get high marks? If there's one leadership ingredient that is often overlooked, it's the organizational climate. Every company has one, and every CEO has to own it. So what is it? Simply stated, climate is what it feels like to work in an organization. Climate is the atmosphere of the workplace. And it is a mix of feelings, perceptions, expectations, and norms in the organization. The climate emerges from a combination of the leader's style and the interaction of the work team. The actions or inactions of the corporate leader influence the mood of the entire organization. As beauty is in the eye of the beholder, the organizational climate is the perception of the employees, not just the management. Climate is a critical tool for leaders, as it's where they have the greatest leverage to impact their organization's performance.
In a very real sense, climate is the report card on productivity. And the good news is, if yours is broken, it can be fixed. Research has identified 6 dimensions that define an employee's perception of their work environment. Conformity, responsibility, standards, rewards, clarity, and team spirit. Let's look at each of these dimensions in detail. Conformity exists when unnecessary constraints inhibit people from doing their jobs. When the rules, the regulations, the policies and procedures or norms are perceived as not adding value to the work process. Conformity is the degree to which people see an organization as being restrictive, as opposed to being flexible and allowing individual initiative. A climate that is high in conformity has a clear set of rules that are expected to be followed. The first one being, follow the rules. The second one, when in doubt, read rule number one again. The bottom line in a company that has a high degree of conformity is less risk-taking and less creativity. Thus, long-term efficiency and productivity are lowered. People who work in a conforming environment often angrily follow the rules while sabotaging the results. Managers tend to have high power needs. If these are expressed as personalized power, it generally backfires. Instead of increasing influence, personalized power erodes it. If the standard answer to why someone is supposed to do something is, because I say so, it creates a conforming climate. Repeatedly, as companies get leaner and meaner to face global competition, the climate of an organization becomes increasingly crucial. The key questions in assessing an organization's conformity are, is there a general perception that the rules and procedures are unnecessary? Do people feel like they're always fighting an uphill battle to get the most reasonable solutions and innovations accepted? The second climate dimension is responsibility. Responsibility exists when there is a perception of personal ownership for one's job. The perception that one can do their job as they see fit without having to constantly check with the boss. Delegation of tasks is meaningful. There's freedom for individual initiative and independent action. Encouragement is given to take calculated risks, be innovative, and try new approaches. An important corollary to the sense of personal ownership of a task is the right to take calculated risks without having to constantly call home for permission. A good rule to remember is that when conformity goes up, responsibility goes down. The third climate dimension is standards, which exist at a high level when there's emphasis placed on excellence in all aspects of work. Goals are set balancing attainability and challenge. Leaders communicate the value of standards in these 2 ways. First, the expected outcomes are clear and measurable. The employees will know when they have done a good job, an adequate job, or a poor job. The manager gives honest and timely feedback. The second way is to convey improvement as a norm for the organization. In this setting, standards are not static events set in concrete, but are a commitment to constant improvement as a way of doing business. Standards are communicated through realistic goal setting. This process enhances standards by encouraging a positive outcome for the individual and the group. Standards that can be met approximately 75% of the time are optimum, to arouse the achievement motive of a whole company. One cautionary word is needed, however. Goal setting assumes a certain amount of risk. Because of the probabilities involved, some people will fall short of their goals, and often goals are held over people's heads like swords where they have to meet them or die. The focus should be on support for success rather than punishment for failure. The fourth organizational climate dimension is rewards. This exists when there is a balance of positive and negative feedback. There is encouragement and support. Positive recognition is provided for work well done. While effective leaders provide firm, direct feedback when work is not up to standards, they also know to recognize dedicated effort. For those people who have a high need to achieve or whose achievement motive is aroused, the motto is, feedback is the breakfast of champions. Feedback, positive or negative, is a reward in and of itself.
The power of rewards to reinforce behavior has been so well documented over the past 30 years, it has almost become a cliché. But the fact remains, when behavior is driven by a need and a goal is reached, recognition and celebration of the accomplishment increase future success. If your organization gets the message that when people do good work, they will be rewarded, there is a snowballing effect. The next variable, clarity, exists when people understand the purpose of the company or the organization. They know their role, their goals, and how they serve the overriding purpose. People know how to get things done. Clarity is the vision, the mission, and strategy of the company, and the dimension of climate most clearly tied to productivity. The larger the organization, the more difficult clarity becomes. But that should not deter you from stating your purposes simply, succinctly, repeatedly, and directly. If you can't summarize your vision briefly, then your clarity and your employees' clarity are muddied. Clarity is work, but it's the most important variable and the most difficult to change. Without focus on the same goals, everyone has marching orders, but they march in 1,000 different directions. Clarity in a specific job depends on the clarity of the organization. Tom Coble shares some questions you can ask when determining clarity.
What are the organization's top three priorities? Do you know them? Are they to increase market share, margins, expand internationally? Where's the company going? And how does it intend to get there? What are your boss's top three priorities? Can you state them succinctly? Oh, by the way, what are your top three priorities? And how do they fit into the organization?
Clarity depends upon simplicity and directness. If the direction isn't lean with all the fat trimmed from the meat, communication gets messy and the work gets sloppy. If the organization's priorities can't be summarized briefly, clarity is going to be muddied. Finally, organizational climate is characterized by team spirit, which exists when people come together to accomplish goals. There's a sense of belonging. Openness prevails. People are proud to be part of the organization. Team spirit is a crucial concept that's underappreciated. It's the glue that keeps the affiliation needs employees have in order to stay engaged. The desire to be on a team, the caring for the greater whole, and the need for pride in an organization is a common craving. Team spirit is often the first indicator of trouble. If team spirit is flat, then you can bet the organization is suffering. It serves as a red flag, warning that the odds of the team winning are down. Loyalty, or lack of it, is clearly tied to turnover, and recent studies have tied team spirit to profit as well. In summary, far more than any other factor, leadership style affects the climate of an organization. Leadership style changes the environment to produce rapid and significant improvements.
Technology of Leadership, Section 8, Goal Setting.
How easily can you state your corporate goals? For the quarter? The year? What performance goals have you challenged your employees to meet? Do they know what they are? If you had trouble answering, you aren't alone. Most of us know we need to set goals, but most of us don't act on what we know. McClellan's research suggests that the goal-setting process itself increases the probability that a goal will be reached. How? By focusing and aligning the thought process behind it. There are four critical elements to understand about goal-setting. 1. The process of goal-setting can be the single most important factor in the outcome. If goal-setting is approached as an opportunity for open discussion, then the process is as important as the content. Everyone gets focused and committed. 2. When you increase the presence of achievement thinking, you increase the probability of success. 3. Goal setting works well with both short-term, easily defined goals, and long-term strategic objectives. 4. Under the best circumstances, there's a possibility of failure. Unpredictability is a part of life, and setting goals takes flexibility. There is no finer way to demoralize a staff than to chronically use goal setting as the weapon to coerce behavior. Goals can often become an obsession as well and used as a weapon. When this happens, goal setting becomes counterproductive. Tom Schenck confirms how important this complete process is.
Goal setting does make a difference. It's an art, not a science, and it has an outcome. It comes as a result of this question. How will we know we've been successful? When a goal is set correctly and by a set of specific criteria, the probability of attaining the goal increases significantly. Probability is increased when the goal scores for imagery and when it passes the test of the subcategories. Scoring for imagery gives the goal personal meaning, and the subcategories make specific goal-directed thinking.
There are six criteria that define an effective goal. A goal must be specific, not general. Learn to be exact and write out your goal statement. The more the goal is clearly defined, the more focused action becomes. Someone might say they want to learn accounting. Is this specific? It might mean they want to become an accountant or that they merely want a working knowledge for their next job or promotion. A goal must be measurable. In other words, how will you know when you are there? How will others be able to tell? Would you run a race if there were no finish line? There must be an objective criteria used to determine whether you've reached your goal. Remember that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. A goal must contain moderate risk. If you attended the LPMA workshop, you engaged in the ring toss game where participants could choose the length of their toss. Most chose distances that were beyond 6 feet. No one wanted to have 1 foot ring tosses. What's the fun of a sure thing? What is there to keep one's interest? Challenging but realistic goals are crucial. Realistic means it's attainable with a stretch. For those of you who participated in the ring toss exercise, realistic means between 3 to 5 feet. Anything under 3 feet and over 5 feet is considered unrealistic. A goal must be time-phased. To say that something is to be accomplished by January does not score for either specific or time. What day in January and what year? Time parameters keep the goal in focus, gauge the pace needed to succeed, and supply the necessary priority pressure. Time deadlines create moderate risk, which increases the focus on the task. A goal must be made public. Broadcast your goals to the world. Let people know what's important to you, what your priorities are for this quarter or year. If you make your goals public, people, especially those who care or count on you, can help you set yourself up to win. And most importantly, a goal must score for imagery. To execute a goal successfully, a goal has to score for achievement imagery. Without this imagery, the need that drives commitment is missing. When it scores for this imagery, it becomes meaningful. Tom Schenck explains.
Not all goals can be personally meaningful. Often we're asked from others to take on a goal that is for the corporate good, the accomplishment of which will not be personally satisfying. If, however, we can set a goal that is personally important to us, we are unconsciously striking a chord, a need that will evoke effort and energy and will increase the likelihood of reaching the goal. Ask yourself, what need does this goal satisfy? When this need is touched, the research names this as imagery, and discretionary energy is brought forth.
It's appropriate to ask an employee if a goal is meaningful. Just because a goal is important to a manager and to the organization does not necessarily make it important to the person who's going to carry it out. Commitment can't be coerced. Emotional involvement can't be mandated. The first step of the goal-setting process entails setting a goal which scores for imagery in one of the motives. When a goal is framed as an achievement goal, it provides the structure to arouse a person's achievement motive. When framed as an affiliation goal, it arouses a person's affiliation motive. And when framed as a power goal, it arouses the power motive. It's important that as you sit down with a person to set a goal, the product you produce together needs to be framed as an achievement, affiliation, or a power goal. When a goal can be framed in this way, it's satisfying. It's a good fit with their psychological needs. In summary, the goal-setting process is extraordinarily powerful when used properly. The crucial aspects are defining goals that score for imagery in one of the three motives, paying attention to specificity, measurability, appropriate risk, and time parameters. Articulating why a goal matters personally significantly increases the chance of success because the thought process and the emotional investment become linked.
Technology of Leadership. Section 9, Job Fit.
Jobs, like people, have a motive profile. That fact is important in understanding how jobs and people can be matched for optimum performance. Since people have differing motives, they'll be better suited for different tasks. The challenge is to create the right match between the person and the job. Teaching positions in kindergarten and elementary grades, for example, are best suited for people with high affiliation motives. These teachers need to enjoy and be good at nurturing young children. High school teachers, on the other hand, need much less affiliation motive. The more senior the manager, the greater the demands are to influence others around goals. Successful managers tend to have power as their dominant motive. Recall our formula from the workshop that describes behavior, B, equals P times E. B is behavior. The P is the person's motive profile, which we can arouse, but we can't change. The E is the environment, and that includes job tasks. A person whose motive profile is a reasonably good fit with the job description will have increased behaviors to be more productive. A person whose motive profile is inconsistent with the job description will not have the direct energy arousal that comes from their motives. In thinking about job fit, the concept of values versus motives comes back into play. Remember that a value can be defined as anything that's important to you. It predicts short-term behavior and is satisfied by external reinforcement. A motive, on the other hand, is something that is satisfying. People take pleasure in doing it. Motives predict long-term behavior. For example, people whose careers are primarily value-driven are often the ones who have a midlife crisis. What they are doing cheats them of who they are, and sooner or later, they conclude enough is enough. Listen as Tom Schenck outlines your specific challenge.
The challenge for a leader is to coach your people to the expectations of the job. In other words, what are the motive requirements of a job? It is likely that one's personal motive structure will not exactly match the requirements of the job. When this is the case, it is necessary to consciously bring the appropriate thoughts and behaviors to the job. Please allow me to repeat. When this is the case, it is necessary to consciously bring the appropriate thoughts and behaviors to the job. That means we have to engage our brain. It is important to note that as we adjust to what is needed, often this will not be immediately satisfying, but necessary given the demands of the job. Organization productivity depends upon our ability to bring conscious thoughts and behaviors to the job.
A high-value, high-motive match is the most desirable. It's a match that is both satisfying and important. People who have this profile match love their work and do their best. In a perfect world, this would be the only kind of match made between people and their jobs. High-value, low-motive match provides importance to the person but isn't as satisfying. There's a horsepower problem in this match as there isn't enough personal satisfaction to drive the behavior. The person says, yes, it's a job that needs to be done, but by somebody else. The worst case scenario is the low value, low motive match. This person wants to quit or simply ignore that part of the job. A high achievement person may make being a janitor interesting by trying to get the job done faster and more efficiently, but he will probably look for a change quickly. The job is just not worthy of his talents. In summary, the idea of job fit, like that of goal setting, is the application of leadership technology to the individuals with whom you work. In martial arts, the strategy is to use your opponent's force and momentum to your advantage. When you identify motive needs and encourage them to find ways to get these needs met, you've made an optimal match.
Technology of Leadership, Section 10.
We've now come to the end of our audio series on motivating achievement. We'd like to summarize some of the core principles we've discussed that can make a difference. The purpose of leadership is to produce change as well as results. The role of leadership is to move an organization forward. Your job as CEO, supervisor, or manager is to create a climate where people want to produce great results and are driven to do it over and over. Effective leaders leverage resources and style to provide clarity, governance, support, standards, and coaching for those they lead. In the previous sections of our Technology of Leadership, we have focused on the right tools that, if applied, can create great leadership. We've introduced and elaborated on motives, motive subcategories, leadership behaviors, and organizational climate, goal setting, and job fit. Let's conduct a brief review of the basic concepts of the Motivating Achievement Workshop. First, a motive is a recurrent concern toward a goal state, measured in fantasy, which drives, directs, and selects behavior. The equation that best exemplifies the LPMA philosophy is expressed as B is equal to P times E. Behavior of the organization equals person, the employees, times the environment, the leader's behavior. You are one of the biggest E variables for your people. The three social motives are need for achievement, need for affiliation, and need for power. People can and do possess more than one motive, but usually one is dominant. Effective leaders learn to observe and evaluate the dominant motives of their employees. Your dominant motive has a direct impact on your leadership style. By arousing the dominant motives of your employees correctly, you increase the energy and effort employees bring to a job. The adept leader assesses the situation and is flexible in applying the appropriate leadership style. Your leadership style directly impacts your company's climate. Climate is the best indicator of a company's performance. Goal setting optimizes goal attainment. The process of goal setting itself can be the single most important factor in the outcome. Try to match employees' motives with job assignments. And remember, the leadership process is the discovery and application of the levers, the fulcrums, and forces that impact the effectiveness of leaders as they move their organizations toward the future. Again, here's Brad Spencer.
My executive clients are always looking for that edge. This is the edge. Understand, it happens this way. Patterns of thinking dictate your habits. Your habits dictate your behavior. Turns out your behaviors dictate the results you're going to get in your life. The results in your life dictate your success and satisfaction by your metrics. This lever is understanding motives. As Archimedes said in the 4th century BC, give me a lever and a place to stand, and I will move the world.
This concludes the Spencer Shank Capers Technology of Leadership audio series. We hope you found this program insightful as well as helpful. We encourage you to return again to these core principles as needed to strengthen and increase your qualities as a leader. Please contact any of our principals for additional information or call our offices at 310-515-7555 or visit our website at ssca.com. We look forward to working with you again. Good luck and good leadership.